Hi, welcome to Ellis Yells at Their Sister. I'm Ellis, this is my sister. Say hi. Yeah, this is my sister. Her name is Claire. This is the podcast that I am making for my English assignment that I am a little bit late on, but that's fine. I'm sure Mrs. Fitch and Miss Fury are kind and gracious and willing to forgive. Anyway, the topic I will be doing it on is if short stories last... No, not that one. It's a short story. In class, we read a bunch of short stories, or not a bunch, we read two. We read, we read Jack by Amory, which is a story about, you know, the giant's daughter, or teenage daughter. It's set in the modern world, and, the giant's daughter to the giantess, lures Jack up into her home and, befriends him and then eats him. And it's a fun little story, but I'm not doing it on that. I'm doing it on Super Toys Last All Summer Long, which is a story about how, a couple people are bad parents. Hey, Claire, have you read Super Toys Last All Summer Long?
No.
Why not?
Because and my class is boring, and we don't do stuff like that.
Actually, that's incorrect. It's because Claire is in the little grades, which is grade 7. Anyway, the topic I'll be doing it on for Super Toys Last All Summer Long is, if the story had a different narrator, who would be the best fit? I argue that the best fit is Monica Swinton, because she is directly connected to all the characters, she has a very unique outlook on, like, the way the world works. And she is just kind of, like... Man, she's mean. It would be really fun to, like, watch her do things. That's not the actual point. The actual third point would be, like... it would be... There's a twist at the end of the story that her son is a robot. And I feel like she would be the best person to tell the story and still maintain the twist. A few quotation, like, my first quotation to prove that she would be the best person to tell the story is, almost by reflex, she reached out and changed the wavelength of her windows. The garden faded, in its place, the city centers rose by her left hand, full of crowding people, blowboats, and buildings. She remained alone. An overcrowded world is the ideal place in which to be lonely. It's very poetic, but anyway... the reason that I think this showcases, you know, her unique point on the world is 'cause, well... I feel like most people don't go out of their way to feel lonely in an overcrowded world, like, unless they have, like, something going on. Like, I don't know, she seems either selfish or, mentally ill. Claire, what do you think?
I think she's just sad.
Yeah, like, Claire, if you had, like, a window that could turn off our lovely little garden in our, suburban home, and it could show you an overcrowded world, what would you do?
I wouldn't do that because noise is bad.
Well, I mean, she didn't hear anything. That's part of the quote, I think.
So you just see a bunch of people that's watching you outside.
Well, I mean, they can't watch her. The windows are opaque.
They're looking at you.
Okay, so I guess the answer's no. So yeah, that's very unusual behavior for Monica. It feels like a genuine moment, but it kind of isn't. She doesn't really care about the people out there. She has never shown anything to care. Her husband works for, like, something that actively works almost against them, or at least not to help them, at the very least. Throughout the story, they talk about the poor people as just an inconvenience and how, like, well, they're starving, but we aren't, because, you know, they're capitalist and that's not fun. And she doesn't care either. She seems like she might pretend to care, or at least, like, indulge in caring for a brief moment, but she never really does. This is a very unique outlook. David, her son, who was, like, a robot, he wouldn't have this outlook. He probably wouldn't have much outlook at all. His entire life is his parents. Claire, what do you think? If you were a robot and, your parents were bad, or, well, not bad, but... we're capitalists. This isn't the question I'm trying to ask. But anyway, Claire, if you were a robot, how would you feel about an overcrowded world where people are starving and also constantly having to enter in a lottery to reproduce?
It depends on what kind of robot we're talking about. Like, are we talking about a beep?
Fully sentient.
Fully sentient? Use your robot powers to stop it, man.
No, but what would you think about it?
It depends on how the robot's programmed.
Well, Yeah, like, but if you were...
What is he programmed
to think? He's fully sentient. He's basically a little human boy, but, like, also a robot. He laments about whether he feels real or not a lot of the time. Like, one time he was talking to
his... wants to be a real boy, like Pinocchio.
Yeah, he's like Pinocchio. Like, you know that movie AI?
No.
That movie AI that the internet man made fun of?
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah, no, that's what this book inspired that movie.
Oh.
You know, the internet man made fun of the movie, but it's actually, like, a fairly interesting drama piece. Anyway,
I don't know what I would think, because I feel like this little robot man wouldn't really care. I feel like he'd just not care about the world, because he's a little robot man, and why does a little robot man need to care?
Uh-huh, so he, like, doesn't care at all, he doesn't have any feelings. Monica Swinton, her feelings would be complex, and difficult to understand, and very fun to describe if you were writing something, and very fun to read if you were reading it. Her husband's feelings are, he thinks the poor...
Boring.
Yeah, I know, his feelings are boring, he's just mean. Monica's mean, but, like, in an interesting way. Her husband is mean, but, like, in a way that you can
boring,
be like, man.
Bad man.
Yeah, no, they're both boring bad men, but, like, Monica's more interesting about it. A thunder thing to illustrate the way that she is connected to everyone is that her son is one of the main characters and her husband is another one of the main characters. The story is only told through these two other people and she's connected directly to them and with the strongest connection. Her husband does not care that much about David, as illustrated by the fact that he never talks to him or even really thinks about him or mentions him in any of the quotations that I found. He mentions him once when he is talking to his wife, and he's like, well, how's David's doing? And then Monica's like, oh, I think that his audio processing is a bit off. What do you think? And he was like, well, we'll send him to the factory. Actually, I believe the exact quote is, his verbal communication center is still giving him trouble. I think I'll have to go back to the factory again. So, you know, her husband does not care. He's not directly connected to David, despite being his father. Monica's connected to him by virtue of being married and thinking about how, like, they live in such a wonderful household and they have a beautiful, beautiful son, which is something that she says a lot. David in the same way as his father is connected to Monica and that he thinks about her a lot and thinks that she's a very wonderful mother just because, you know, he cannot think any other way. But he does not think about his father once. He only ever mentions Monica and how much he loves his mother. So that shows her direct connection. Also, in terms of keeping the twist, that was another big thing that I thought about. To keep the twist, you would need to, like, have the outlook that, requires thinking of David as human. And Monica clearly doesn't think of him as that human, because she, like, seems very flippant about the way that she acts. Like, these two quotes... Why not simply go upstairs and scoop David up into her arms and talk to him like a loving mother should to a loving son? And then on page 448, right after that one, which was page 447, is, her face was blank. Its lack of expression scared him. He watched fascinated. He did not move. She did not move. Time might have stopped as if it had stopped in the garden. She doesn't go up to him, but she still thinks about him like he's a son. She just doesn't care because she knows that he's a robot. The twist might be revealed earlier because she doesn't seem to think of robots as human, as illustrated in the quote in page 447, where she's like, the answer stopped her dead. Why waste time talking to this machine? She doesn't want to waste time talking to them, and I mean, they aren't human, but it'd still be nice if she thought of them as they are, like, mostly sentient. So, yeah... She would probably be able to keep the piece, or not the piece, keep the twist a little bit longer as she actually kind of thinks of David as human, or at least tries to. Claire, what do you think? Do you think Monica sucks? That she'd be able to keep the twist?
Well, I don't know if it'd be able to keep the twist if she knew that her son was a robot.
I mean, everyone in the story knew that he was a robot, and it was only revealed at the end.
Everyone except for him knew, and that's how you kept
the twist. Well, no, he knows.
Wait, then what's the twist?
Well, he doesn't say it outright. He just asks his, like, little butler fella, hey, like, Teddy, am I real? And Teddy's like, we're all real, David. And then Teddy gives another vague answer because that's all he can give.
So Teddy is just, like, a riddler. Teddy only speaks in rhymes. Teddy is the true
master. I'm not quite sure where you got that from, actually.
Teddy is the true master.
Actually, I'm not 100% sure where you got that from, like, at all.
Hey, I'm just going off weirder quotations you have.
Yeah, that's part of the thing. To revisit what I said at the beginning, Monica Swinton is the best to be the narrator because she is directly connected to everyone. She's connected to her son directly and her husband directly because she thinks about them the most and she cares about them the most because her husband does not care about David and David does not care about her husband. She's also connected to Teddy because she actually, like, talks to him, like, face-to-face or bare face-to-face. And she's also the best narrator because she would do best for keeping the twist because, like, she's probably the only one besides David who thinks of him as kind of human. And if it were David, it would be less of a twist because you would be able to guess that almost immediately, like from the way that he answered things or from the way that he thought about things, because you'd be going through his view. So his narration would be like, my processing unit said this or something like that. And I mean, that wouldn't keep the twist. It's just like, oh, wow, this kid's a robot. Weird. And she's also, finally, she's the best person to narrate because, well, she is a very unique outlook on life, literally throughout the entire thing. She doesn't acknowledge much about, like, how she could have tried to love her son. She just says that she has, and we don't really get an answer to how much she has. We just know that she has, and we could learn that through her narration. We don't know why she wants to be alone in an overcrowded world. We just know that she does. And it would be very interesting to explore why she does want these things. I would also like to add that when I reread the story over and over and over again, I came to the conclusion that Monica Swinton sucks. And so does her entire family, actually, except for David and Teddy, because they can do no wrong. And every single person at the conference with David's dad, or Monica's husband, whose name I can... Does he have a name? I'm not quite sure. Anyway.
Let's call him Ted.
No, because Teddy already exists. Let's name him David. No, David is already a name. Let's name him Sean.
Richard.
Richard. Yeah, Richard. My conclusions are Monica's the best narrator, and also, Richard and Monica suck. David can do no wrong, Teddy's trying his best, and Monica's the best narrator.
Now, question, why is keeping the twist so important to you?
Because it adds, like, a little flavor to the story. Like, the only point of the story without the twist is to just say, man, technology is weird and humans suck. With this, it's to be like, technology's weird, humans suck, and also, what is the morality of a machine? If you reveal the twist at the beginning, then of course you're probably thinking about that, like, throughout the whole thing. You're like, is this machine have human thoughts? But if it were to go through, like, David's narration or his father's narration, then you would get none of that. You'd be like, this robot clearly does not have real human thoughts because of the way that they are thinking or the way that they are describing it. So, you know, you get a little bit of taste of questioning your own morality, which is always a fun time. We always enjoy questioning morality.
So, the moral of the story is just don't make sentient robots.
No, that is not the moral of the story. The moral of the story is that humans suck and that we will hopefully get better.
Yeah, but
these humans
that,
are not better.
We get that moral of the story so many times. Can we get a different moral to the
That is
sci-fi
not
story?
The moral of the story, but I appreciate your input. Okay. And that has been the first and probably final episode of Ellis Yells at Their Sister, which is what I remember the title as being. Thank you for listening, Miss Fitch. I'm sorry this is so late. I really just could not drag Claire out of her room, which is the excuse I'm going with, and not I was
that's
moving and stressed.
That's a complete lie.
I was moving and stressed, and that's the final excuse.
Is it?
Now, what should we end it on? Should we, like, find a song from Spotify?
No.
Okay, we end with Dead Silence.